when so many people join together to praise God, they appreciate help from an instrument that will keep the beat and give the right notes. Many congregations make use of the organ, which can serve a sitting church with beauty and
That's absolutely true. Yes, it can be mighty enough to accompany hundreds of voices in a big congregation, or quiet enough to accompany a single solo voice. The organ can be majestic enough to lead singing on an Easter sunrise service, or for Christmas Eve, a gentle accompaniment for a quiet evening.
The organ isn't only heard when people are singing. Before, during, and after the service, the organist adds other music, solo music. The organ all by itself, not a voice, not a word to be heard.
Church in downtown Milwaukee. where Em and I were married and where I spent my last year as a seminary student, as their student assistant. The organ you saw there has since been expanded. In the video, it was about twice as big as the St. Mark's organ. Now with the expansion, there are three keyboards and it's three times as big as the St. Mark's organ. So it's quite an impressive instrument, and in a building with acoustics similar to ours. It's really a fantastic church building there. If you're ever in Milwaukee and you have your pick of 40 Wells churches to visit on a weekend, just in the city of Milwaukee, let alone the burbs, I all but insist you go to Grace in downtown Milwaukee. First of all, because after worship, you walk a block and there's all sorts of great dining restaurants options for you right along Water Street. But it's just that they do worship well. They're really a leader in many ways in the Wisconsin Synod and founding Church of the Wells, but just a beautiful music program in addition to many of the other things they do there also. Looking at the study guide and referencing the reference sheet for today, which has the Bible verse we're going to look at, read St. Paul's words to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 14. This is about the matter of speaking in tongues, which our Pentecostal friends are kind of gaga about, but which you will notice in Paul's estimation, this was not something that they really should have been gaga about. Maybe not the top spiritual gift, even though they perhaps thought it was. 1 Corinthians 14, Paul says, "What shall we say? What then shall we say, brothers? When you come together, everyone has a hymn or a word of instruction, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. All of these must be done for the strengthening of the church. If anyone speaks in a tongue, two or at the most three should speak, one at a time, and someone must interpret. If there's no interpreter, the speaker should keep quiet in the church and speak to himself and God. Two or three prophets should speak, and the others should weigh carefully what is said. And if a revelation comes to someone who's sitting down, the first speaker should stop. For you can all prophesy in turn so that everyone may be instructed and encouraged. The spirits of the prophets are subject to the control of the prophets, for God is not a God of disorder, but of peace." When you look at that excerpt, there is a ton of things we could analyze. We could spend the whole Bible class just analyzing that little section of Scripture. But I want to get a big picture overview of it, 30,000 foot flyover. Bullet point number one, under question one, what problem had developed in Corinth when it came to the custom of speaking in tongues? It was a competition, it was chaotic, it was not orderly. This is the section that encourages orderly worship, whatever that ends up entailing. It was very disorderly, and as a result, people were not benefiting from what was happening when they gathered together. Paul scolded the Corinthians for the disorder. When there is disorder in worship, people cannot be edified. How can a musical instrument help us bring order and organization to worship? You got a confident organist playing, or it doesn't have to be an organist, although we're talking about that today. Organist, accompaniment, ensemble, whatever. When they're playing confidently, keeping the beat, kind of keeps everybody together. How would you feel if we discovered that the organ was out and the piano was stolen and the electricity was out so we couldn't plug in an acoustic guitar. If the electricity is out, it doesn't matter. There was no other way to accompany. How do you think worship would go? Yeah, we're going to speak the hymns today. Probably wouldn't go real well. You need that support behind you. It keeps us all together. It keeps us all moving. Singing would probably drag if we tried without some type of supporting accompanying instrument. Question two, many Lutheran churches use an organ to accomplish this purpose. Can you think of other ways congregations might accomplish this objective? There's a bunch of reasons, very practical reasons, not historic, not we've always done it this way. There's very practical reasons why an organ is probably the best instrument to sustain singing, but it's not the only possibility. Can you think of some other options that are available? Penny?
Some of the mission churches are just using like a computer that they
send the song. Okay, MIDI, when this study guide was written 20 years ago, that probably wasn't even an option. But now churches can use computers that produce similar sounds to an organ or piano. 10, 11 years ago, when we knew that we were expecting child number one, not number four, we said, this is our one chance to go to Hawaii. So we went to Hawaii in April of 2003. We have one church in Hawaii on Maui, although there was a secondary congregation of that church on Oahu, the most populous island, was the main church. But on Maui, there was a smaller group of the same church that met Sunday afternoons. And the pastor would actually fly over to Maui on Sunday afternoons. And they rented out the upper level of the Hawaii Canoe Club on the ocean, on the beach. That was really tough to do worship in that setting. Oh, man. The church was vacant when we went over. So they hadn't had a pastor for months. Lay people were serving the congregation, being in touch with Wells pastors in the mainland. And so I called up and said, hey, you want a pastor? And they said, yes, please. And they were going to try to cancel our return flight back to San Francisco, but we didn't let them do that. So they flew us over. So we did the morning service. Emily was their first live organist in 10 years, I think. We did the morning service and Bible class, and they flew us over to do the service and Bible class on Maui at 4:30 and 5:30. Bible class at 4:30, worship at 5:30. And there's a guy in the corner of the room with his laptop computer and some speakers doing service of word and sacrament. Just clicking, you know, and it was the same service. Well, it didn't feel like the same service, but it was the same service that was held at their other site on the other island, on Oahu, earlier that day. So a computer can do the job. And now MIDI is being attached to even pipe organs. So if your organist is sick or gone, you can still have the pipe organ doing the full service thanks to the advance of technology today. Nothing beats a live organist. Nothing beats a live organist. But it's great to have those options today. Other options.
Piano.
Piano is good.
Guitar
can be good. Gotta have the right sound to it, but it can work. It can work really well.
A band.
A band? That's becoming popular. I like the word ensemble because band makes me think. But it can work. Depending on what you're doing, it can work. Portable keyboard is a possibility. It certainly gives you flexibility you might not otherwise have. Pastor Gerlach said that that's how they provide a lot of instrumental music when he was here in the 80s and 90s. You didn't have a lot of instruments. You didn't have a brass ensemble like we've got. And so keyboard, somebody was on the keyboard playing with a brass sound to it to accomplish that. Question three. Through the centuries, the organ and the organist have assumed additional responsibilities beyond the basic task of organizing the congregation's singing. The ministry of the organist has taken on special importance in Lutheran worship. The following are three of Martin Luther's four worship principles. How do you think each of them may influence the Lutheran organist? How does the principle, let the people participate, influence what the organist does?
Don't drown them out.
Oh, that's no fun.
Pick songs that can be sung.
He's giving me those laser eyes when he said that too. Pick songs that can be sung. Next Sunday I'm picking all tough ones, and I'm saying that you picked them. No. Pick songs that can be sung.
There's something about the registration of the warrior. How the tone is, it makes it harder or easier to sing.
Yeah, what selection of sounds, we call them stops. Those switches that the organist puts down or up to turn on or off the different sounds are called stops. It's like a recipe. We're going to talk about this a little bit today, how this all works. And we'll talk about this a lot more when we do the organ demo the Sunday after Easter. But what's going to support the church without making them feel like they're being drowned out? Anything else that this principle says to an organist? You kind of want to lead them, right? Because if you don't keep the tempo going, they can lead you. But you don't want to drag them. You don't want to like make them feel like they're being dragged along either. There's kind of a tricky balance to find. So you got to think about the tempo. Can they sing this at this tempo? You got to think about the registration. Yes, one more.
Poetry and
Yeah, that actually ties in real nicely with the next principle. Let all of God's gifts be used. That's the principle that says, let the arts be used to proclaim the gospel and worship. And you think of the church here, you're thinking of a Lenten hymn. If you're singing Stricken, Smitten, and Afflicted, 127, you probably aren't going to play it with a full organ. Why? It's a somber hymn. It doesn't fit. Yeah. When you are playing A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, and there's the stanza, though devils all the world should fill, all eager to devour us. When I'm playing that, I like to throw on, there's this growly sound on the pedal called a reed. And it kind of, so when you play it, only the bottom note, only your pedal note, the bottom note in the chord, is making that growly sound. The other three are not, the melody and the other notes. And so it kind of sounds like Satan growling around trying to cause, you look at the words, you say, how can I artistically bring out this message? Now you're always going to be listening for that growly sound every time that we sing that hymn. I love the fact that so much of God's creation is put to use in the organ. You've got wood, you've got tin, you've got lead, you've got electricity, you've got wind, you've got technology, you've got all sorts of mechanical things going on up there. It takes all sorts of knowledge of God's creation and gifts from God's creation. I think of that organ, I think of Psalm 150, let everything that has breath praise the Lord. It's really exemplified by the organ and everything that goes into it. The last principle, let the experience of the church be honored. How does that inform the Lutheran organist? Or maybe the church in general? This is the principle that says we're not afraid of tradition. We're not against new stuff, but we're also not afraid of tradition.
Playing Bach and some of the old Lutherans
for church service or whatever. So we don't eschew new music, but we don't toss out the old music either. Some of the great music of the Lutheran past certainly is worth bringing out today. So that we find ways to bring those old hymns into the 21st century. We talked about Luther's hymn, Christ Jesus Lay in Death Strong Bands. We still have the old tune that has a lot of heritage to it in our hymnal, and we sing it Easter Sunday, but Kermit Moldenhauer from Martin Luther College prepared a brand new melody for it that people also like. It keeps that traditional text with us today. That's kind of doing both. The principles of Lutheran worship really get applied well to the work of the organist. Flip the page to page 2, question 4. As the role of the organ in Lutheran worship increased, organists also began to take seriously Dr. Luther's first principle, let the gospel be the most important part of worship. How might this principle have influenced organists as they thought about the musical selections they played before, during, and after the service? In other words, pre-service, offering music, postlude. If the gospel is the most important part of worship, how does that affect that extra music that the organist plays when you're not singing? Bach wrote a lot of preludes and fugues that are beautiful artistic works that should be performed, but they tend to be performed more in the concert hall than on Sunday morning. Not that they never get performed on Sunday morning, but they why is that? They don't necessarily carry a hymn melody. If one of Jory's pieces today was the melody of hymn 289, it was before the service, but let's just say for the sake of discussion and argument that we closed with hymn 289, and then as you walked out, you're hearing her play an organ piece. piece or a piano piece with the melody of 289. What does that do for you during the rest of the day, possibly, Pam? Yeah, you know, as the saying goes, as you heard me say, you don't leave church humming the sermon. You might remember some points from the sermon, but you may leave the church remembering points of the hymn as that melody is in your mind. I almost feel guilty, for the organ anniversary service 2 months ago, I almost felt guilty that my pre-service music that day, the two pieces I played, neither one was based on a hymn. I picked this stuff to show you the range of possibilities that the organ has. And I kind of broke my personal rule, which was to almost always pick hymn-based stuff. And I had a little note in there about, well, normally we would go for the hymn-based stuff. Today, this music is being played to help you see the possibilities that the organ has. But why do we aim for the hymn-based stuff? That was almost a rule at the seminary. I think in all the chapel services I played at the seminary over 3 years in class, I don't think I ever played something that was not based on a hymn as the guys came in for chapel and as they left after chapel. Not that that's wrong, but we're always trying to connect to the message of the day, which is often found in the hymns of the day. We really have, our organists here really do a great job of that. I work with a lot of churches when we do these schools of worship enrichment, these weekend worship seminars. I do about one a year, and we have several of them throughout the course of a year. And comparing St. Mark's musicians to what's happening out there, I really have to give a lot of kudos to our organists. They really think carefully about, okay, this is the message of the day, here are the hymns for the day, how can I bring that out in the stuff that I play when you're not singing? So kind of keep your ear in tune to that. I know it's hard when you sit down and you got the five Rugrats that are all in the pew and you got to order the Cheerios for this one and this one's crying, I got to take them. You're not listening to the music maybe at that moment. But, you know, think about what the organist didn't just come here on, I guarantee you, no St. Mark's organist, because all of them work hard, show up on Saturday and go, well, this looks good, yeah, that looks, you know, they're thinking in advance, they're planning, there's really a well-crafted service week after week. So that might be something to enhance your time before church as you're waiting for church to start. Look at the names of those pieces and see if you can figure out how it connects, because there's almost always a reason behind it. Pam. I picked the hymns, which is why Alex gave me a dirty look when he said that, pick easy hymns. We're having fun, don't worry. Yes.
Down at Grace, where we were on Thursday, or
the your, Wednesday your Belinda?
Before Thanksgiving. Your Belinda.
Okay.
The Wednesday before Thanksgiving, Pastor Gaglin started a hymn fest.
Okay.
You could raise your hand and we'd sing the first and last stanzas of your favorite hymn.
Sure.
Well, one day we picked up a member and we were taking him to church and he was a little bit weird, but we mentioned that there are so many funeral dirges in the hymnal. Like, he picked the absolute worst singable hymn in the hymnal, raised his hand, and we had to sing it. Needless to say, it was a solo.
Interesting point.
And we didn't take him home.
You're walking, buddy. I didn't finish Pam's question. Churches have different practices. Here, I pick the hymns. I don't mind, though, if an organist says, you know, this fits well with this Sunday, and I got all sorts of stuff that I could, you know, if there's something, generally it's been for me, but if an organist has got an idea, I don't say, no, this is the way it is. I mean, I invite that because it means that the work they've already put in can be put to use in an actual service. Every church is different, though. North Hollywood, it was the, Kurt Zareski was the music director at the time. He picked all the hymns. That's right, Vickard. Most churches, it's the pastor. Sometimes it's a worship committee or but generally speaking, I think it's the pastors. Follow up.
Right.
Sure.
To really
be solid. Yeah. One common theme throughout certainly helps the service, the take-home value of the service. Question five. Organists eventually also began to assist the congregation singing by using the various sounds of the organ to match the mood of the song the people were singing. How might an organist vary the sounds available on the organ in the following stanzas from two familiar Christmas hymns? On the left, how silently the wondrous gift is given, so God imparts to human hearts the blessings of his heaven. Name the hymn that it comes from. Oh, Little Town of Bethlehem, 60.
We are just more careful. What do we think about as we decide which music?
No. Softer, registers, perhaps a bit slower. Softer to bring out the words. That's a Christmas hymn. Now look at the other Christmas hymn. Hail the heavenly Prince of Peace, hail the Son of Righteousness, life and light to all he brings, risen with healing in his wings. How are you going to play it? Crank it! Yeah, the full, you know, there's this little, it's called a piston. These buttons on the organ that you allow you to hit a button and the sounds you've already preset all come out at once. So you don't have to go, okay, now. That would be hard to do between stanzas. You know, there would be a big long break between stanzas. So you just hit a button and in a split second, it turns on all the sounds that you want. There's a foot piston and a finger piston or a thumb piston called sforzando. And that basically turns on everything on the organ. You might want to use that for this one, right? Just crank it all out, Christmas morning, festive, letter rip. What hymn is this from? Hark the Herald Angels Sing. That one's a little more obvious. We're going to explore a little bit. We're going to do a lot of this the Sunday after Easter, but I want to at least have you have a sense of what's happening up there in that orchestra that we call an organ. Orchestra is really a good analogy for the pipe organ. Because you don't just have one sound, you've got all sorts of different sounds and all sorts of different categories. This has an orchestra that has different sections. You got the woodwinds over here, and you've got the strings, and you've got the brass, you've got the percussion, you've got all these different sections. The organ has essentially four different sections to the orchestra. And just as orchestras may have smaller sections or may omit a section from time to time, an organ, depending on how big it is, depending on how you build it, may emphasize one section of the orchestra over another, and that has some effect on what you do in worship. So we'll take a look at the challenge box. Mr. Schmidt, you can pick your favorite hymn of all time. And whatever hymn you want, and then let us know in a second, and we will use that, maybe like a phrase from that hymn, the opening phrase, and we'll listen to some of the different sounds. Look at the challenge box. A congregation can use a variety of musical instruments, including the human voice, to organize the songs of the worshipers. However, if a congregation wants a musical instrument to do more than simply organize the singing, then an instrument like the organ is a better choice. If a congregation wants the organ to do what Lutheran church musicians have done during the centuries, having a specific kind of organ is important. Our church in Santa Barbara had some people, they're not members there anymore, but they really, really, really wanted a pipe organ. And they found some church somewhere that was selling their pipe organ, and they installed it, and it ended up being a lemon. Because it was built for a specific purpose. And the purpose wasn't Lutheran worship, to accompany the singing, to play music that brings out certain melodies. It was an organ that was sort of meant to be background music type organ that you might experience in other kinds of Christian churches. There's a reason you build an organ a certain way. There's a reason an organ from the local Catholic church might not transfer real well into the local Lutheran church and vice versa. So what we put up there is important. The instrument on which Lutheran organists developed their craft was the pipe organ. The pipe organ produces sound when air flows through cylinders called pipes. When the organist presses a key on the keyboard, a channel that leads from a source of air to the pipe is opened. Air rushes through the pipe, and the pipe makes a sound. When the organist stops pressing the key, the sound stops. What's nice about that is when you hit a piano note down, what happens to the note? It fades away. Yeah.
When you hit the organ note down, what happens to the note? It stays. That's why an organ is generally speaking, a more beneficial instrument to accompany singing. Because when you're singing, what do you want to feel? Like you're being supported. And if the note is immediately dying away, what happens to the singing? You tend to back off. Now, you can write piano music, and this is important, you can write piano music so that the notes kind of keep moving. It's called arpeggios. Instead of hitting chords like you might on an organ, the left hand may be going up and down, playing the same notes of the chord, but playing them on different beats. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and, whereas an organ just hold it all the way through. That keeps the production of sound so that you feel supported. When we use Divine Service 1, Professor Moldenhauer, Kermit Moldenhauer from Martin Luther College, wrote the music for Divine Service 1. He wrote an organ version and a piano version. Actually, he wrote two organ versions, a simple accompaniment, a little fancier accompaniment, and then a piano accompaniment. On the piano part, you're doing this a lot. Why? Because if you just take the organ part and play it on piano, it doesn't quite work as well. So I have no problem with our organist saying, I'd like to do piano today. But then we need to find the piano accompaniments that help you feel supported. And fortunately, we have that, for example, for Divine Service 1. But that's why an organ is really helpful. It has nothing to do with tradition. It's to do with the sound is sustained so that you feel supported as you sing. Not all pipe organs have the same number or kind of pipes, but every pipe organ has pipes that have different pitches and different sounds. The pitch of the pipe is determined by the pipe length. The shorter the pipe, the higher its pitch. It's just like when you have an old glass soda bottle or you've got a beer bottle. And what do? You know what I mean, right? And when you've got a lot of liquid in there, what happens to the sound? The sound is when you consume your beverage and then you go, does the pitch go higher or lower? Pitch goes lower because there's more space the air's got to run through, right? The more space the air has to run through, the lower the sound is. The less space the air has to run through, the higher the sound is. That means those big 8-foot pipes up there are going to be higher or lower sounds? Lower. We got a 16-footer up there. That's the lowest sound of all. The little guys that look like pencils, those are the real high-pitched ones. Those are the ones that if we just played them, the dogs would come running to the campus because they're super high-pitched. And if you play them by themselves, they sound kind of funky. They don't sound right. They are more like spices to be added to a recipe, not the main ingredients are the lower sounds. Where were we here? The quality of a pipe's sound comes from the material the pipe is made of. Wooden pipes generally have a more mellow sound than metal pipes. Loud sounds usually come from wider pipes. Quiet sounds from thinner pipes. This has always thrown me off. Can you just play a couple notes with the 16-foot sub bass on the pedal? Like the low notes, you know, the last few notes of the octave. By that self, you know, you never hear it just like that. You always hear stuff added on top of it. But these really low notes, when you're up in the balcony, they strike me as louder than the higher notes. You really hear the pedal, and I couldn't figure out why that is. Then it dawned on me, when you're driving down the road, and you're stopped at a stoplight, and somebody who's blaring whatever, with the windows all the way up, but you can hear, what do you hear? You hear the low notes. Low notes go through glass. Middle range and high notes bounce off glass. So what did our organ builder do knowing that we have a lot of glass right behind the organ? The low notes are a little more powerful on this organ. And to my ear, it always sounds like they're a little bit stronger than the regular note, the middle range, upper range notes. But then when I come down here, it sounds just right. Why is that? The glass. And I suppose if you're outside, you might hear the low rumble. I don't know. Anyway, some hands were up on that. Thought or no? You're in? Okay. Moving on. Pipes are grouped in ranks or stops. A rank or a stop is a set of pipes that have a similar sound and pitch relationship. There are usually as many pipes in a rank or stop as there are keys on the keyboard or the pedal board. If you look at this chart on the other page, these are all the sounds on the St. Mark's organ. We're a Lutheran church, and there's a German Lutheran organ building tradition. And so when that's your background, you tend to put the names of the sounds in German. These stops are the names on the left-hand column. This is what the organist sees before him or her as they sit on the bench. So if you're a German speaker, all one of you, two? All right, we got two of you. Then you probably can translate some of these interesting terms. But otherwise, you could put them, sometimes they're in French, sometimes they're in English, Lutheran churches tend to have German names on their stops. What you'll notice is that I added to the second column, which is the kind of stop it is. In other words, what part of the orchestra is it from? A church organ has four different kinds of sounds. The four categories of sound are a flute, which probably sounds a lot like a flute. Yeah, that's a hard one. Another sound is called a principal. It doesn't mean the organ sounds like Mr. Bauer, or whoever your favorite principal might be. It just means it's the main sound of the organ. It's not meant to imitate any other instruments. Then there are strings, which might imitate a violin or a cello. And then finally there are reeds. The reeds are the sounds that really stand out. They're produced by a vibrating reed at the bottom of the pipe. We only have one string sound and one reed sound on our St. Mark's organ. We've got many more flutes and principals. That's not unusual, but to have just one of each shows that this was kind of more of a cost-saving measure. Organs are expensive instruments, and so we have one of each, but these parts of our orchestra are smaller on the St. Mark's organ. Then you'll also notice that there are numbers. The number 8 shows up a lot. 8 is sort of the regular pitch. If you play middle C and you've got an 8-foot stop on, the middle C you play is going to sound middle C. Now, 8 means whatever note you play, it's actually playing that note. Why is the number 8 used? An organ keyboard has usually 5 octaves. So you go to middle C, and you can go down 2 more Cs, and that's the bottom note. And you can go up 3 more Cs, and that's the top note. So there's 61 notes. The bottom note is an 8-foot pipe. That's why the number 8 is used. If I play an octave higher, the pipe is 4 feet long. If I play an octave higher, the pipe is 2 feet long. That's how it works. If you see the number 8, that means all these sounds are what you expect. You play middle C, it sounds just like middle C. If I cut the number in half, what do you suppose that does to the note? It's an octave higher, right? So if I play middle C, if I have a 4-foot stop on and I play middle C, it's actually sounding a note that's an octave higher. It's like I'm playing this note, but I'm really playing this note. If I have a stop that's got a 2 on it, what does that mean? They're 2 octaves higher. So what that does is, instead of the organist needing to grow a whole bunch of extra hands and fingers, it's like you're playing 3 notes when you're really playing 1. What it is it's like there's more people playing in the orchestra, all the notes that you're playing. So just by way of example, what hymn are you going for?
436.
Jesus, Shepherd of the Sheep?
Yeah.
All right. 436, great hymn. Jesus, Shepherd of the Sheep. Great Wisconsin-centered roots to this hymn. So, Shannon, if you would be so kind as to have on the great, the 8-foot principle, and just play a phrase or two of Jesus, Shepherd of the Sheep with the 8-foot principle. So now take off the 8-foot principle and put on the 4-foot octave. This is another principle. We would never normally hear it this way, but this is what it would sound like. What do you think about that for a coming to the congregation?
I'd say, too
loud. This doesn't sound right. Now let's have some fun with this. Go on the swell and put on the two-foot principle and just play a phrase of it. Sounds like a jack-in-the-box, huh? Out pops Pastor Straight in the jack-in-the-box. So you can see how what the pitch relationship is, right? It doesn't. You would build. You would always have an 8, and then for flavor, you'd add more on top. Now put an 8 and a 4 and a 2, and play a phrase of the hymn altogether. That sounds normal, right? Yeah. You've got the full orchestra of principles playing this, and it sounds much more natural to our ears. Put the 8-foot flute on the grate, and let's hear a stanza or a phrase from the hymn. No problem. So these are flutes playing it. Would you accompany the church that way? Probably not, but it would be great for background, right? I like that flute. By the way, put the 8-foot gedeck on the swell and keep the 8-foot flute on the grate, and maybe play the same phrase on both. Don't couple them down so we can hear the difference in flutes. There's two different flutes on the organ. It's a little quieter, right? And now the same thing on the lower one. It's different, a little bit different flavor. The one's a little bit louder, could be like a solo flute maybe. Now play it on a 4-foot flute on the swell. There's the jack in the box again, right? And there's a 2-foot flute, and there's all sorts of pitches that we can add. So you see how you start with this regular 8-foot sound, and then you add stuff on top to make it more interesting or to bring out whatever sound you're going for.
What is the 1 1/3?
1 1/3 is 2.5 octaves higher. You would never play it just for fun, play something with a 1 1/3. Everybody's cringing. now, play 8 4 2 1 1/3. Brightness to it, yeah. So we've talked about flutes, we've talked about principles. Can you play something on the Gebshorn, the string? So a little violin-y to it, violin-y-ness to it. And then finally, this is you would never normally do this, but let's have some fun with this and also put the fagot on the pedal. Spices in a recipe. You probably wouldn't, you'd never do it that way, but you might have it playing as a solo. I have something in my left hand and playing a melody in my right hand. Or now do like full organ with the reeds. This is like everything thrown down. So the organist is like a chef, and you know, you've got your steak. Your steak is the 8-foot sound. And then you've got to say, what's the marinade going to be, or what are the spices going to be, or am I going to broil this or grill this, or what am I going to do with this? That's all these other things you add. And you just, it sounds, I'm hoping that I'm making it seem a little less complicated to you. It's not as hard as maybe it seems at first glance, so just get used to it after a while. Put the recipe from the steak in the bulletin. That's a good damn try. As we're doing this little demo for you, are there questions coming to mind or things you want to ask? Or?
Three things. One, having a few thick, you know, more spots on your organ helps not only the capital organist, but the less capital organist, which, you know, coming from a woman who they ask, like,
Yeah, an organist's personal library, which is always growing, is probably worth a few grand. You're always, why are you always expanding your music library? Because, doggone it, they keep changing the hymnal. Why? These are our heritage hymns that we're not getting rid of. Everybody likes these, or we're going to make you suffer through a couple of tough ones, but this is what we're retaining. Now with this new book, we're going to try some new stuff. Well, if we've got some new stuff, what does the organist probably want?
New music
to match it. So when you walk in, you hear the melody before you have to sing it. You're learning it without realizing that you're learning it. So then the supplement comes out, and then in 10 years a new hymnal is going to come out. And we're going to say, all right, Alex told us these doozies have to go, so we're taking those out. And we're going to try some new ones, we're going to promote some new stuff. So the organist library, personal library, is always kind of under construction. And Pat mentioned this is why you give them honorarium to your organist, so that they're expanding their library, they're taking workshops and seminars to keep their talents up. There's a certain personal expense into doing this job, and that's the why behind the what there. I think I've explained pretty well the rest of the box that's on page 3. Real briefly, a couple of questions. Bottom of page 3. Yes, the majority of hymns in our hymnal were composed to be sung with organ accompaniment, but some were written with other instruments in mind. If you take the red hymnal out and open up to 327. God be with you till we meet again. What kind of musical instrument was meant for this one? I'm not a tenor. What musical instrument is probably meant for this one? With these ongoing repeating notes.
Piano.
Because the notes are ongoing and repeating. I picked that once for a pastor's conference, and some pastor came up to me and said, you must have really had to hold your nose to pick this one. This doesn't sound like Stray. I said, I liked it. What do you mean? I like variety. Just because it's got a little Baptist roots to it, that's not a bad thing. Why do you think the hymnal 68, Away in a Manger, there's guitar chords above it, which was pretty novel in Wisconsin Synod in 1993. Why are there guitar chords there? Because the guitar would play it. No. But more than that. That hymn, that gentle Christmas Eve 10:30 service hymn, would sound really nice with an acoustic guitar plucking out the tune. That would be very effective. 595, which is the opening hymn for all of our Wednesday services during Lent. Before the ending of the day, Creator of the world, we pray. Why is it likely that that was originally sung without accompaniment? It's chant? Yeah. How about Go Tell on the Mountain? Not chant. But why was it likely to be sung originally without accompaniment? African American spiritual, right? This is what they were singing. This is part of their tradition, and so we add a covenant to support the congregation. But it shows you that even in '93, when this book came out 21 years ago, there's still a bunch of different styles represented. And while the pipe organ can support all of those styles, it's probably wisdom in like Go Tell on the Mountain. If you've got I can't do this, but if you've got an accompanist who can really do gospel, that would be fun. That would really be fun to really ham it up in a gospel style, singing Go Tell It on the Mountain. I wish I had that kind of talent. I can jazz it up on the organ, but I can't jazz it up on the piano really as well. But I think we've got a variety of talent here that we may have some people that could do something like that. 7. The videotape does not mention what might be the most important work of a church choir. Can you imagine what that work might be? Hint, this work is what requires the choir to sit behind and or above the rest of the church. Leading, supporting. When the choir sings the late service and they've already attended the full early service and they sing and they leave when they're done, I very often will tell them, but please don't leave before the sermon. Help them sing the hymn today, especially if it's a harder hymn. Today it's an easy hymn, so the choir can leave. But help the congregation sing, support them in their singing. 8, You find yourself listening to the words the choir sings. I hope so. What might make it easier for you to understand the words?
Printing
them helps to bring that out. It addresses Paul's concern when he was complaining about the churches where the speaking in tongues was going on. If people don't understand you, it does no good. Well, printing those words out in the bulletin can certainly help with that as well. Anyway, I hope that was a little bit interesting and insightful for helping you understand what's going on upstairs on that instrument. We're going to spend a lot more time on Sunday after Easter with our organ demo trying to make that understandable. But you've got a little bit of advantage over everybody else who comes to that because you've got a little preview of that. We'll review these concepts.